Well, we love to talk about nature and wildlife on this program and enjoying the outdoors. And today we're going to talk about the activities of those various species of animals, plants, birds, other wildlife when they take and when those events and activities take place every year here in the state. That's the study of phenology. A couple of great guests with us to just talk about it. Stan Temple with me in the studio, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison, Senior Fellow with the Aldo Leopold Foundation. And great to have you back, Stan.
It's good to be here, Larry.
With us by phone today as well, Nick Anich is the Breeding Bird Atlas Coordinator with our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And Nick, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it very much. The calendar that I look forward to seeing is the Wisconsin Phenology Calendar, and I have it right in front of me, and it's a beautiful calendar once again. And Stan, where does that word come from, phenology?
Well, phenology basically talks about pheno, which is sort of the seasons. And it's been around for a long time. I mean, as long as we've been human beings, of course, we've been keeping track of the seasons because it was important to our survival. And it's really since the 19th century that people started to become a little more, shall we say, scientific about it and started actually recording the dates on which events occurred. And once they recorded those dates, trying to make some sense out of it. And the science of phenology basically arose out of those naturalists keeping track of things.
And you are really very strongly connected with Aldo Leopold. And there's quite a connection between phenology and Aldo Leopold.
You know, there really is. He probably, because of his book, A Sand County Almanac, he stands tall, shall we say, in the pantheon of phenology, because A Sand County Almanac, at least the first half of the book, is based on the phenology observations that he and his family made at the shack, his cabin up on the Wisconsin River. But Aldo Leopold was a product of the 19th century natural history movement in that he started keeping phenological records from a very young age. He was a grade school student when he started keeping notes on when he saw plants blooming and birds migrating and so on. And he literally did this until the day he died. As far as we know, his last written words in his little pocket notebook when he had a heart attack, his last written words in that notebook were a phenological observation of a lilac bush.
Absolutely amazing. Talking with Stan Temple and Nick Anich today about the Wisconsin Phenology Calendar and just wildlife phenology in general, and I hope you'll join in. If you have questions or comments, have you engaged in phenology? Do you take note of when things happen? Do you note the cycles of nature the year round, or have questions about it? Have you paid attention to the birds this year? I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. or post on our Facebook page, and our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And Nick, and I just turn to you for a minute. I have the Wisconsin Wildlife Phenology Calendar in front of me, and it's a beautiful calendar, and lots of groups involved in making this project come about.
Yeah, it is. I'm representing the Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas, and we contributed a whole bunch of sightings to this year's calendar, which you can see in green on the calendar. The calendar is actually a collaboration between a number of partnerships, University of Wisconsin Environmental Resource Center, UW Extension, Aldo Leopold Foundation, NRCS, which is a Natural Resource Conservation Service, and then the Atlas. And, you know, it's really a great resource for people interested in what's happening outside.
Well, and as I look at it, it's an amazing calendar. It contains, aside from this absolutely wonderful photography, it contains a lot of great useful information.
Yeah, and so, you know, the Bird Atlas is this citizen science project. Right now we're in the first year of the second Breeding Bird Atlas. The first Breeding Bird Atlas happened between 1995 and 2000, and on that atlas we had 1,600 mostly volunteer observers that went out into the state and collected 170,000 breeding records. This year we've had already 700 observers submitting over 24,000 checklists documenting 1.7 million birds breeding in Wisconsin. So, you know, as we sifted through some of our database to pull out interesting records for this calendar, you know, it's a really great project and a really great tie-in between the atlas and the calendar, because we have so much information about when birds are coming into the state and what they're up to.
Yeah. What can you pick out a specific thing or two from the calendar just to give people an idea?
Some of the stuff that we added with this kind of most recent update are maybe also some species that are relatively new breeders in the state. If you go to May 12th, you've got Kirtland's warblers arrive on territory. So that's an endangered species that just recently started breeding in the state. You know,
it's almost on my birthday. My birthday's May 14th.
Yeah. And then, you know, whooping cranes are another species that the Bird Atlas has found breeding that were not breeding in the state 20 years ago. I think we've got some observations about whooping cranes laying eggs there on April 24th. So that's some sort of fun stuff that Wisconsin has that not every state gets to brag about.
I want to ask you now, and we'll bring it up again later on, but how do people get copies of the calendar? I know it's got to be a popular calendar.
Yeah, I think the easiest thing is to go to the website. Their website is wiphenology.com, wiphenology, and then they're also available at the UW Extension Learning Store.
And that's one that most of our listeners know pretty well, that UW Extension Learning Store. And we actually have links on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show for people to get copies of it. It's certainly beautiful. And the information, the sidebar information, I really enjoy reading that information.
Yeah, new this year are some narratives on habitats for birds on the sidebars. Those are good read.
Yeah, I think from year to year the sidebar topics change, which I think contributes substantially to the popularity of the calendar. Once you've bought one calendar, it's pretty good for the dates for a while, but the fact that each year there's a new sidebar and new photographs makes the calendar a bestseller. And in fact, I would encourage people, if you're interested, to act quickly, because they do sell out very fast. They're very popular Christmas presents, I would guess.
Yeah, absolutely. You can, by the way, if you have a question for our guest, maybe you've got a bird question, a phenology question, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page, and our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. We have a pretty diverse state, if you think about it, in terms of climate and wildlife. And do the data apply across the state, to most areas of the state?
Well, it's a good question, Larry, and it's one that actually is complicated in Wisconsin. And the understanding that complication actually goes all the way back to one of the first scientists in the state of Wisconsin, Increase Lapham. Back in the mid-1800s, he kept phenological records and made a very astute observation that things happened later close to the Lake Michigan shore than they did further inland, because of the chilling effect of the lake sort of retarding the advance of spring. So when you look at the state of Wisconsin, of course, from north to south, we have quite a range, so that for the same species in southern Wisconsin, things might be happening almost as much as a week later in northern Wisconsin. Things happen later along the Lake Michigan shore than they do further inland. So it's a very complicated pattern across the state.
And so keeping track of it, does the calendar help us with that?
Well, the calendar is based, well, I should say parts of the calendar are based primarily on observations from south central Wisconsin, because they're built on the historical record that Aldo Leopold left us, and the records that his daughter, Nina Leopold Bradley, and now the Aldo Leopold Foundation have continued to keep. The records from the Breeding Bird Atlas, of course, reflect dates from across the entire state.
Talking today with Stan Temple, Professor Emeritus of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison, and Nick Anich, Breeding Bird Atlas Coordinator with our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, talking with them about Wisconsin wildlife phenology and the phenology calendar. You can join in with your wildlife question or a question about the calendar at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Rebecca Haas, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking Wisconsin's wildlife phenology with our guests, Stan Temple and Nick Anich. You can join in. Questions or comments, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And if you got a photo you want to post, you can post that there as well. I would love to have you talk about some of the data from the calendar that's been posted in the calendar itself. Nick, maybe you can talk about that.
Well, I mean, as far as the bird data, we just tried to sort of, take a cross-section and get some variety in there. One of the things that's interesting, you know, we usually think about birds as breeding in the summer, June and July, and most of them do. But if you look across the state, all the different species we have, there's actually quite a big spread. You've got great horned owls, could be sitting on eggs as soon as January. You've got some of the finches that are early breeders. You've got the gray jay, actually, is a bird of the northern conifer forest, and they actually are known to cache perishable food items. So they get on nests really early. They can be sitting on nests with snow on their back, and their young can be hatching out in May. So we just kind of, tried to pick a diversity of different types of birds and spread them out across the year to try to represent the full breadth of the wildlife that we have.
Yeah. Stan, you're going to add to that.
Sure. And I think one of the things that you'll be able to readily see when you look at the pages in the calendar is that there's something happening almost every week of the year. There's a few blank weeks there, but not many. So we have records of things in the plant world and animal world that you can be looking forward to almost every week of the year.
Are snowy owls appearing in the calendar yet?
Snowy owls are kind of an interesting situation in that they are very unpredictable about when they will be here. And the last couple of years, of course, they've been very visible in Wisconsin, and actually earlier than they often have been historically. But their arrival in Wisconsin and departure in Wisconsin is not influenced nearly as much by our climate as it is by things that are happening much, much further north up in the Arctic tundra.
Yeah. How much change occurs year to year? Or is it long? I mean, does it take sometimes 10 years to see significant differences?
Well, no. Actually, we can have years that are highly unusual in terms of climate, in which there will be a really strong and obvious response in many plants and animals. Many of your listeners will probably remember that 2012 was the warmest spring on record in Wisconsin. And I think almost everyone couldn't help but be aware that lots of things were happening at the earliest dates that have ever been recorded in Wisconsin. So when you have these unusual years, you can have things that are not in line with the sort of historical dates. And of course, superimposed on that is the long-term trend of our climate warming. So for many, but not all species, but for many species, things on average are happening slightly earlier over time.
And maybe departures are some slightly later over time. I mean, here we are in southern Wisconsin with 40 some degree days at in December, which is not usual, I don't think.
No, yeah, we've been seeing a lot of sort of lingering songbirds this fall. I'm up in Ashland, and it's been warm as well this fall.
So and that's pretty I think. A little unusual anyway. We had a caller who wondered, speaking of north, a caller from Bayfield wondered why there seems to be fewer birds in the north in the last couple of years. Is there any reason for that at all, Nick, or is it just a local variation?
I mean, I think it can kind of be local variation. We're sort of at the dreariest time of year up here in the north, you know, with... We just got kind of a cold push that kind of pushed out the last of our birds in the last couple of weeks, so I think we're very much transitioning to winter right now. I don't know of any, you know, quantifiable changes necessarily, but, you know, as we were just talking about, there's plenty of year-to-year variation, and, you know, however the weather goes, you know, the ducks may all come through in one push in October this year and November the next year, or the songbirds may hang around your bird feeders for 2 weeks longer this year compared to last year. So I think it's mostly just kind of year-to-year variation. But obviously, you know, the study of phenology is how we get at understanding these patterns on longer scales.
Yeah, and so this has been going on... How long has the record keeping been going on?
Well, here in South Central Wisconsin, we actually have the longest continuous string of phenological records in the U.S. The records of a large number of plant and animals go all the way back to 1908 when one of Wisconsin's unsung naturalist heroes, Bill Schorger, started keeping his phenological records, and Aldo Leopold and his students contributed in the 1930s, and of course many citizen scientists are contributing now. But over that more than century now of continuous phenological records, we've been able to tease out a lot of patterns. And the one thing that is pretty obvious is as the climate has changed, some species of plants and some species of animals are able to adapt and shift the timing of their seasonal events, where other plants and animals don't seem to be able to do that. And that gets into an area that is troubling as we get deeper into climate change, where some species of plants and animals that interact with one another can get out of sync, so that you may have migratory birds coming back after the peak of insect abundance has passed for raising their young. You might have insects emerging at the wrong time to pollinate plants, and so on.
So that's, how does phenology help in understanding that and reacting to it?
Certainly given us an idea of which types of species are adapting, shall we say, and shifting the timing of their seasonal events and which ones aren't. So on the bird front, a very clear pattern is that the resident birds that stay in Wisconsin all year round and the short-distance migrants that perhaps only migrate hundreds of miles throughout the year, they seem to be the ones that are adapting the timing of their seasonal events in pace with with the changing climate. Whereas long-distance migrants, the ones that go all the way down, say, to the tropics for the winter, they're not shifting their timing as much. And the reason is that if you're lucky enough to be a wood thrush spending the winter in Costa Rica, you don't have a clue what the Wisconsin climate is like, and your migratory movement north is going to be dictated by changes in day length, not necessarily the temperature that we're experiencing here in Wisconsin. And day length, at least for the time being, we haven't found a way to screw that up. It tends to remain fairly stable from year to year.
Oh, man. Talking with Stan Temple from UW-Madison, Nick Anich from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources about Wisconsin phenology. You can join in, too. You got a question about birds or animals? I hope you'll give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. You know, one of the things I have to check, does the phenology calendar show the distribution of wild turkeys in the state or not?
So that is a, I see that on your Facebook page there. That is one of the screenshots from the first year of Atlas data. So, you know, there's overlap. Obviously, the Atlas kind of sifted through all their records to add to the calendar. The map is not part of the calendar, but the map is coming from the Bird Atlas. But the as you can see, this is one of sort of our big initial results from the Bird Atlas. One map shows between 1995 and 2000, sort of the southern two-thirds of the state had turkeys and the northern forest did not. But in 1 year of data, the Bird Atlas has already shown that turkeys are now pretty much statewide.
It's always amazing to me. You know, we have a cabin in Bayfield County and see turkeys there.
Yeah.
In the Shawamigan National Forest is quite a quite an experience that I never thought I would ever experience.
They really have moved in.
Oh, man. Well, let's take some calls. Again, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Stu in Oshkosh online, so let's go to Stu. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I was wondering if there were birds that winter up here that didn't used to, that do because people are feeding them.
Well, that's a
this
good...
This is an Oshkosh area.
Yeah. Well, in Wisconsin, generally, we have a number of changes in the environment that have allowed actually a surprising number of birds to stay further north than they might otherwise have been inclined to do. Part of it, of course, is the warmer winters that we're experiencing, but another big part of it is the food supply that we're providing. Some of it is very deliberate in the form of bird feeders, and a lot of it is inadvertent in that it's waste grain that stays in fields that allows birds to have a much more abundant source of food than they ever did in the past during winters.
And like you were saying, a lot of these species that are showing this tendency are not the ones that were going to head to South America, but maybe the ones that were going to head to Illinois. You know, so sandhill cranes or mourning doves or cardinals, you know, some of these kind of short-distance migrants, if they were going to migrate, would be more prone to kind of make the decision to hang around.
Most people, if they've read a Sand County Almanac, will remember Aldo Leopold talking about the migration of geese being one of the sort of signs of the changing season. And, of course, now our resident giant Canada geese are with us year-round, often to our dismay.
Yeah, and that was a bird that the giant Canadas were close to, well, we thought, close to extinction at one point. Not that many years ago.
No, they were proposed for listing among the original species that got listed in 1973 on the Endangered Species Act. So they've undergone just an incredible resurgence.
Like the turkey.
Like the turkeys, yeah.
Only I think the turkeys got a lot of help, human help, but I don't know about the Canada.
Well, the Canada geese did get a lot of human help as well. Food supply and changing timing of hunting seasons and all have helped them a lot. We've got a number of birds. Sandhill cranes also have had a huge resurgence in the state. And where our sandhill cranes from Wisconsin traditionally went all the way down to Florida to spend the winter. Now, with milder winters, we're increasingly finding that the birds are staying in Wisconsin quite late. They're only going as far south as they need to find open ground, and then coming back very early. Back in 2011, 2012, the sandhill cranes that nested in my marsh in Mazamani, Wisconsin, they were around still the week of Christmas bird count. Be this week, actually.
Yeah, this week.
And they disappeared. We got a snowfall, and they headed off. But they were back on their territory on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, that's
amazing.
And
they did not go to Florida. They probably went only to Indiana and hung out there and turned around and came back as soon as we had that incredibly warm spring.
Wonderful story. Stu, again, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, let's turn to Jeff in Sparta next. Jeff, hi, thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
My question is, I moved up to Sparta, Wisconsin about 8 years ago, and I used to see all kind of dead skunks on the side of the road, and I hardly ever see a skunk on the side of the road or smell one or... And I was just wondering, is there something with the skunk population or rodents in general in this area that's gone down?
All right. Thanks for calling, Jeff.
Yeah, it's not a phenology question, but it almost certainly has something to do with disease. Skunks and several of the other small, mid-sized carnivores do go through population fluctuations that often have a lot to do with epidemics of disease. I have not heard anything specific about skunks, but they are subject to common diseases that we vaccinate our small, medium-sized carnivores, our dogs and cats, for, like distemper and rabies and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably the explanation, Jeff. Yeah. It's a low point in a population that's been influenced probably by an epidemic of a disease.
Yeah, and Nick, you'd agree with that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. You know, a bird that I don't notice as much, frankly, a bird that I never liked very much, because there were always so darn many of them, was the house sparrow. And house sparrows don't seem to be as, I just don't see them as much as I used to.
Larry, you've lived long enough to see a population decline. House sparrows have definitely declined, not only in Wisconsin, but pretty much across the U.S. And the explanations for that decline probably have to do with changes in farming and the food supplies that are available to the birds. But it's a phenomenon that is widespread, and a lot of people are observing it.
I just don't see them as much anymore. Jim and Camp Douglas, let's turn to you next. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Okay, Larry. I've got a couple of questions. One is on the purple martin. I've been trying to attract them for years, and unsuccessful. I was in Minocqua in June up there on Lake Minocqua. I took note of the martin houses along the shorelines near residences, and I didn't see any activity at all. That was one thing. And then the bobolink, I don't see that bird anymore. Mm-hmm. And I put a bat house up out here, and I didn't get any bats last year, but I understand it might take a little while. So I'll let you guys ponder that, and then I'll take the answers offline.
Thanks. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Well, we got bobolinks, purple martins, and bat houses.
Well, Jim, you know, the purple martin problem is that there are currently a lot more purple martin houses in Wisconsin than there are purple martins to occupy them. Purple martins have been declining over time in Wisconsin, and at the same time, people who are concerned about them have been putting up lots of boxes. So we've sort of overprovided nest mm-hmm. boxes, and a lot of people get disappointed when they spend a lot of money on a purple martin house expecting that the birds are immediately going to arrive. I would say right now there's probably a lot of competition, you might say, between neighbors, where one neighbor is fortunate enough to have had the purple martins adopt their house and the next-door neighbor was unfortunate enough not to have them. But it's simply a problem that the purple martins are declining.
And bobolinks, Nick, maybe you can make a comment on the bobolinks.
I was just going to add to the purple martins.
Sure.
You know, this is a species we really have our eye on for the Breeding Bird Atlas, and we are seeing a major decline in northern Wisconsin. You know, there's spots that we had them 20 years ago, and people are checking and not finding them. You know, the other, I mean, there could be a lot of things going on. One thing the purple martin people will tell you is to try to make sure that your house is in good shape and that it's relatively out in the open, because there are a lot of martin houses up there. Some of them haven't been cleaned out or are kind of falling into disrepair, and some of them are kind of being encroached upon by trees. And the best ones are, you know, way out in the open, especially by a lake.
Yeah.
But as far as the bobolinks, you know, bobolinks are one of the grassland birds, and grassland birds everywhere are declining. You know, part of this has to do with changing farming practices, conversion of things to more intensive agriculture, and, you know, one issue for some of these grassland species is the timing of haying. If you have somebody haying a field right as the baby birds are about to leave the nest, then you've lost all these nests, you know. But, yeah, grassland birds in general, you know, it's mainly kind of a habitat availability issue.
And I might add that bobolinks are one of our real long-distance migrants. They go all the way down to southern South America for the winter. And life isn't good for them down there either. Some of the same changes in agricultural practices are depriving them of wintering habitat as well.
And for a while they were worried that, you know, bobolinks and dick thistles and some of our long-distance grassland migrants were getting exposed to chemicals in South America. I think that issue is perhaps a little better than it used to be, but that might not be helping either.
I'm trying to remember when was the last time I heard a bobolink song, and I can't remember. It's been
they're still around, but it's very much like the purple martins. When there are not many of them around, they can settle into what, to their eye, is the very best habitat. So if you're looking for bobolinks, you really have to look for a high-quality grassland site.
And our caller mentioned a bat house. He has a bat house, and sometimes it's just the positioning, isn't it, Nick, of where it is and how high it is? And
yeah, I guess I'm not up on all the details as far as that. But
so I think, you guys on your website, the DNR website, has plans for building a bat house, and along with those plans are directions on where to, or how to place the house. And I think probably it wouldn't hurt for the caller to go to the DNR website and take a look at the plans, because I know the plans have directions for how to properly place.
Mm-hmm.
Pat in Oshkosh has a question. Hi, Pat.
Yeah. Hi, Larry. Hi. I'm calling about myself. I'm a Kansas transplant. I just moved up here in April. When I lived in Kansas, I could see starlings, and they would, you know, like, in spring, they would be in the trees, just a small batch of them and all that, and they'd be flying back and forth like they're having a chat session, and then in the fall, they would just be in huge flocks, and they'd all go everywhere together, but I don't see them here.
Yeah, starlings have also declined, like house sparrows. We still have plenty of them in Wisconsin. This time of year, a portion of them have left and moved a little further south, but they actually stay in Wisconsin throughout the winter. And if you want to see large numbers of them, find a feedlot operation. They tend to cluster around places where they can feed on the food that's been put out for cattle. And for starlings, one of the really important things for them over the winter is open water, which, of course, we provided a feedlot. So
sure. It's
a great opportunity for them.
Yeah, thanks, Pat, for calling. And Gene in Waukesha, I'll turn to you. Thank you for calling.
Okay, my question is, I'm 66 years old, and when I was a kid growing up, I grew up in Oconto County up in the Nicolet National Forest, and there were whippoorwills everywhere. You couldn't sleep at night sometimes because they were right outside your window. And on the roads too, the town roads, they would be flying up. If my dad was driving along, they're everywhere. But I don't hear or even see one anymore. What happened to them?
That is another species that we are worried about, and they fall into a category called aerial insectivores, or birds that do most of their feeding on the wing, which also includes the common nighthawk and things like chimney swift and, you know, to some extent, the purple martin and, you know, the swallows as well. But this is kind of a mystery and something that we are eager to see how our bird atlas data shakes out. But, you know, it seems to be that most of the remaining whippoorwill strongholds are kind of in, you know, pine barrens or pine oak forests with dry, dense understories. And as soon as you get out of that habitat into kind of these mixed forests that they used to like, a lot of people are reporting that numbers are going way down.
Well, you know, all these great questions bring me back to the wildlife phenology calendar, because there are a lot of answers and a lot of good information on this calendar that you can refer to and compare to your own observations as you make them through the course of the year. You see that first robin, or maybe somebody said that we've still got a robin in Trempealeau County while he was deer hunting. He saw one. I think one of the nice things about, you learn a lot as you have this phenology calendar. You actually get some wonderful photography, but it also kind of helps you kind of compare what you're seeing to what normally happens in the state.
And Larry, you know, your callers obviously are good observers. They are observing a lot of things out there. And now the opportunity, if you're out there observing nature, the opportunities are really quite easy for you to contribute to citizen science projects. For birds, we've been talking about birds a lot. The eBird program, mm-hmm. if you sign up for that, it allows you to not only enjoy watching birds, but to share your observations on a huge scale so that you can contribute to an understanding of birds.
Well, I tell you, I thank you so much for spending time with us. We talked about turkeys earlier, and I've got to mention this because I didn't know this. Matt sent us a note on Facebook saying that he saw turkeys while camping on Oak Island in the Apostle Islands.
Wow.
Last really
summer.
Something.
Wow. Even the naturalists were surprised that the turkey somehow made it over to the Apostle Islands.
Well, Matt, you should make sure to get that record into our bird atlas.
That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah, that is a dandy one. And guys, again, the phenology calendar is available. If you go online to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, there's a link there. You can get it at the Learning Store and at the Environmental Resources Center as well. Great gift, and it's small charge, isn't it?